Honeybee! Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, November 16th. November 2021.
November.
Alongside Fire Pro G Ian.
It's still October.
I'm Hudson Soft Pat Contry. On the show today, Ian, what are we talking about here? We're talking about the Zelda Game & Watch to my left. An Amico gets left, reviewed in Germany.
Everything you own in a box to the left.
I'm not sure what that is. Atari XP announced this morning. And more to happen. Ian, I battled a mouse over the past weekend and last night.
Sure did.
But you can listen to the exclusive podcast on patreon.com/podcast to hear all about that. What did you do this past weekend?
I hung out with a couple friends, friends of the podcast.
Friends of the program?
Friends of the program. Our friends Lisa and Tom came into town. You met up with us. We went to Mitch's for seafood. It was very
good. Could be our new hangout place, Ian.
I had a crab cake there. It was delicious. It was a wonderful crab cake.
It was wonderful.
It was great. And then my back is still shit, so they...
You're back.
Vonnie went and hung out with them in L.A. yesterday and brought me back pork buns and some other delicious treats, so that's pretty nice. I also started playing Shin Megami Tensei V. That just came out on Friday. That game was announced. It was first shown at the very first Switch reveal.
I was going to say, I sound familiar with that game.
It was just still images that they showed then.
Okay.
Basically just announced it was coming and then said nothing about it for about 4 years. And then earlier this year, they were like, it's finally coming out. And it's coming out.
That's the Fire Pro method.
Yeah, it's coming out by the end of this year. So for those who don't know, Persona is a very popular RPG series. Persona is actually a spinoff of the Shin Megami Tensei series. They're generally darker RPGs. The mainline Shin Megami Tensei games play almost kind of similar to like demonic Pokemon. You play as a main character, but you have to talk and barter and convince other demons to join your side by giving them money and items and stuff. And then they fight for you. But you have a small amount of these characters that you can keep with you at any given time. The big thing with the Shin Megami Tensei games is demon fusion. So you get them, you level them up, but then you sacrifice them to make new demons just as quickly as you get them. So you're constantly changing your loadout. And it has a great soundtrack.
You said load.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, really liking it. It's hard. I'm playing it on casual, and it's still a difficult fucking game. It's nice to play an RPG like this where things like stat buffs and debuffs actually mean something. Because when I play games like Final Fantasy, you can usually just scroll, gloss over all that stuff. You don't need to get into the systems in a game like Final Fantasy. You can usually, as long as you're leveled well enough, you can mash attack and spell and, kind of get through it. And in Shin Megami Tensei games, there's a lot more going on in playing to, enemy weaknesses, and your strengths is much more important. So, yeah, that's what I did this weekend. It's been good.
Yeah, I did some yoga. I convalesced. I always say this, that 2020, there was no travel that year for me. And now this year I'm reintegrating the travel back into my schedule and doing three events in what is that, 5 weekends is not how I can continue to sustain life. I think it's so it was good just to relax for like a weekend.
Sure.
I know, this weekend coming up, I can relax again and start to do stuff. Like maybe edit a new Flea Market Madness. So that'd be fun to do. Other than that, I don't know what I did this weekend. I'm trying to remember. We got some good food. We laughed a little bit. We arm wrestled a couple times. Ian won 2 out of 3. So I bought the calamari.
I did not arm wrestle anything. I was just looking at I saw a picture of one of those arm wrestling arcade machines the other day.
We had them down the shore. It was great.
They're cool as shit, but like they're always meant for righties. So I don't think I could ever play them.
You got to develop the ambidextrousness. Ambidextrity? Yeah. Let's celebrate the life of Bob Lawton. Founder of Fun Spot. Passed away 90 years old. Surrounded by his family. The family's going to continue to look after Fun Spot going forward. And that's a good life. It was 90.
Yeah, 90 is
90.
A long run.
Good run, providing arcade fun for everyone for decades. Good for you, Bob.
Thank you for your service, Bob Lott.
YouTube announced something big. Big, big news. Where is it?
Big, 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 big news.
They are getting rid, well, they already reduced course. They were getting rid of the thumbs up and thumbs down on videos. Then they reversed course and said, we're still going to have it, but they won't be, the score won't be visible unless you're a creator who chooses to still see it on the back end, or you could, you know, not enable it so you never see what the score is.
So there's a thumbs up and a thumbs down now, but you just don't see numbers associated.
I don't know what
them.
It's going through. As of yesterday when I looked, they were still visible.
Mm.
And of course, the most thumbs down video was that announcement.
Yeah.
And this is a there's mixed feelings on this because there's obviously pros and cons to this. It seems like YouTube always does things like 3 years too late, and they're super slow to move. It seems like a sort of top-heavy company, maybe, and that the user experience gets left behind. That's what I've seen in my experience. It's like the actual user experience is the last fucking thing they concern themselves about. They're more concerned about tinkering with the goddamn algorithm every year and a half. That's what it seems to me. And that's even like a mystery. But anyway, so the point is, that's what they decided to do. But the targeting, the dislikes, and obviously people do it because they're trolls. They do it, and there's even bots that probably do it. But there is a reason to have the dislike, though. It prevents people, in theory, from not watching videos that are clickbait, have nothing to do with the title or description, or promoting scams or like bad. You know what I mean? There's a reason why that thumbs down exists. So hopefully, before you click on it in your search results, you can say, "Oh wow, this is like 90% thumbs down. I don't want to watch this." You know, there's a reason for it to exist. So I'm glad that they made the decision to keep the thumbs up and thumb down, because then hopefully the algorithm will still, I think either way, like it's still interaction within the algorithm, and a thumbs up and thumb down, or even leaving bad comments, it still helps a video. But there has to be something in place in YouTube's side to not promote videos that are scams or fishy or fishes themselves, P-H-I-S. There has to be.
I think it serves its function.
Yeah.
I don't want creators getting harassed. I don't want that sort of thing happening, but I've never heard of the thumbs down being an issue. You hear about issues on Twitch and things like that, but I've never seen a huge movement of creators being like, I'm getting too many thumbs down and it's
plus
harassment.
You can disable that yourself already. Right. I could have disabled it when we had brigading from a couple of,
Can you disable thumbs up and thumbs down?
You can disable so it's not seen. Absolutely. You can do that.
Then, yeah.
You can disable comments. You can do whatever you want.
I know you can disable comments. Then there's no reason for YouTube to get rid of it. It's purely for advertisers, I feel like, at that point.
I don't know. But the fact that they reversed course so quickly, I hate when these companies make the decision then reverse course because it shows me they're so out of touch with what people think are thinking the user base. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
I was talking with the 24 hours. Oh, we didn't know what was going on. Like, maybe you should have asked. Maybe you should have asked people. Maybe you should have asked some of the creators. Because maybe even the creators that, like I said, we've been victims of this, but we don't think it should go away.
Yeah.
It's a small price to pay, you know? But now, then adding the stipulation now that, well, if they're going to remove it, but now I can see it on the back end. But then the option not to see it still, I guess, whatever. If you want to be, you don't want to see it, you know? I guess as long as the algorithm's protected, though, that's fine. But there has to be a way for low-quality content to not get recommended or come up in search results. That's the bottom line. If they have a way to account for that, then, yeah, within 6 months, I think people will get past this. There's been tons of big changes on YouTube before. Remember all the reply videos? When that went away, people lost their mind. It used to be a rating. It used to rate the videos.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be a star rating. God, it seemed like I was a thousand
Jesus,
years ago.
Yeah, that really does.
So there you go. It is what it is. Playdate news, Ian.
Bummer. So
sorry to me too.
So the Playdate has been delayed by 2 months. That for those keeping score at home, 3 portable systems were supposed to launch in December. Right now, we might be getting one, and I'm not even 100% certain on that.
But this was going to launch. There's a reason.
I know. I'm getting there. I'm not.
I'm telling the audience that.
I'm not flaying them alive. But Playdate does have a good reason. And that is they found 5,000 defective batteries in their initial run of 20,000 units, thereabouts. So they're sending
in the first batch.
Yep. So they're sending all of them back to have all the batteries replaced. Basically, they were testing out the batteries, and they found that some of them were so bad that they weren't even holding a charge ever. They weren't taking a charge, so they were just bad batteries. Anyone who's worked with batteries, we've had issues with like replacement PSP batteries and GBASP batteries that work before where we've gotten a bad batch. Sometimes there's just a manufacturing problem, and they come to you basically already spent. So they're sending them back to get all those replaced, and then they're going to start shipping them out. They say about 2 months, they think these are going to be shipping out in February. What a
nightmare, though, for them to discover that after they have it in hand. It's like, was there not spot checking being done at the factory?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, who knows? But they gave a really good explanation. They explained what they're doing. They explained the time frame. They took pictures of them. These things are manufactured. They're made. This isn't vaporware. They just discovered an unfortunate problem before they got to shipping. So they're going to take care of it. Other Playdate news that's a bit more interesting is that supply shortage has hit them. They've been told that the current CPU, I think it is, that they use for the current build, they would not be able to get more of them for 730 days. So 2 years.
I'll say that's 2 years on the nose, isn't it? 365 times two, Pat math? Yeah.
Yeah, thereabouts.
They said, why don't you say 2 years? Does 730 days make it seem like it's not as bad as 2 years?
I guess.
I mean, to me, it sounds worse than 2 years.
Yes.
That seems like a ton of days.
Well, I think that's the point. They wanted to really, make it seem bad. So
that's 2 years.
That's 2 years. So they did a whole bunch of redesigns, and they have a new board.
New board, new CPU. They found a replacement.
They found a comparable CPU. They said that no one should notice any differences on the outside in terms of how it acts, and that's what they'll be using going forward. So this is,
So you're getting the first 20,000 batch. You're going to have the original design.
Yeah.
After that, mine, they're going to change it up.
Right.
But there should be no difference, obviously. That these are little CPUs that are not too powerful.
Yeah, this should have difference in performance, how it looks, holds weight, et cetera.
It won't change the price.
It'll functionally be the same thing. It'll be, they're going to keep it the same price.
But it's interesting, the approach, because obviously it costs time and money to redesign a board.
They said it costs them lots of money.
So, but they realize, though, we have to do well by our customers. We can't screw them over.
And right.
This is one of the things you do during a chip shortage is you try to redesign and to make sure your product comes out, especially after people put in pre-orders. Elbow, elbow, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, you don't just sit around without a new release date and say, well, it'll happen.
You don't just
happens.
Blame the pandemic constantly, because guess what? Tons of products are still coming out. Electronic products during the pandemic, and they're figuring shit out.
You do shit. You do shit.
Even if you take a little bit of a loss, overall, it's good for the health of your company to put out products and to get revenue in. This is common sense, but I'm just reiterating it. So they were very upfront about it. I don't think people were complaining or it's like, okay, bad batteries. It's good you discover it now. Obviously, they show up, it'd be a catastrophe if half the batteries people got.
No, that would be, I think right now they're in a position where because they can show their progress, I think the 2 month delay is a way easier thing for them to weather optically, as opposed to having one quarter of your shipped units have faulty batteries.
Yeah.
That would look awful.
So, yeah, so let's see. So you're going to get the first 20,000 a couple months later, second half of 2022, with another 10,000 landing at the end of 22. I'm not going to get mine until the end of next year now. Oh, man. I'm going to miss the whole season. I'm like, 22,000, I think.
The season starts from the moment you open it.
Oh, so I have to catch up?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, unless you find a way to hack it, which I'm sure people will do.
There's a time barrier?
Your season time starts line? From the moment you open it.
Uh-oh. Okay. All right, Playdate. But I'm glad they figured things out. They're figuring things out here and getting the product out. I think it's going to be a big deal. When you hear, I guess they haven't released the official number, but when you hear there was like at least 50,000 of these sold. Like at least. That's like what the word is. That's significant for a product like this. And it could be more than that. Once it comes out, they can do more. Good for you, Playdate. Good guys, Playdate, providing a good product that people want to enjoy. Just like at ultimate10.com, you can enjoy lots of good products there. I don't have to redesign a lot, but I update the certain Ultimate guidebooks between different revisions. We have RBI baseball stickers that aren't redesigned. The pins are fine. That's what you get there. And yeah, I made the transition working. I made it work.
It was all right.
It was all right. 6.5 out of 10. Yeah, and I'm going to be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/contracode. Ian will not show up, I don't think.
Nope. I will be recording a podcast tomorrow, but I'll keep it secret as to which one.
And I'm on cameo.com/PatContry. I'm going to be also at the Sac Gamers Expo in Sacramento, December 18th and 19th as well. Come out and see me in, is that Northern California officially, Sacramento? Yeah, that is, right?
Yeah.
Or middle? It's before. Is that before
it's
San Francisco?
It's NorCal.
It's before San Francisco. That was before.
I don't know.
I always forget the rotation of Sacramento versus San Francisco. All I know is you get to San Francisco, then a Bigfoot starts living like 10 minutes above that. It's like the last major city, then it's like Bigfoot territory in California there. You want to talk about the Xbox
20th anniversary of backwards compatibility for the Xbox? Well, 20th anniversary of the Xbox. 20th anniversary of the Xbox. They did some backwards compatibility updates. I don't think anyone was expecting any more necessarily backwards compatibility of original Xbox titles. So they did, I think they announced, I think it's something like 70 more titles for backwards compatibility.
76, according to the IGN article there.
360 and original Xbox game titles. Bringing the list up to a really healthy number. It's, of course, not everything. There are still some glaring misses. But I think for people, they didn't expect more anyways, so this is a really nice surprise. Microsoft did kind of put a period at the end of that sentence, though. They did say because of licensing restrictions and funds and, you know, just time, they can no longer dedicate any more time to backwards compatibility of those systems. I'm sure there's still plenty of backwards compatibility. Actually, I think it's 100% backwards compatibility with Xbox One titles. So they're done with the 360 and
I should
Xbox
hope,
backwards compatibility.
There's not a hell of a lot of exclusive Xbox Series X
I mean, what I mean is I don't think it's by title. I think it's just everything plays. I don't think they have to do anything special.
Yeah, nothing special. It's just a more powerful computer, basically.
Right. Exactly.
They don't do the tender loving care on the original Xbox and 360 stuff to the same extent.
So, yeah, nice to see.
From the list here, you know, do a couple here. You got all the Fear games on here.
50 Cent, Blood on the Sand is on there.
That's the game I always bring up, had the ridiculousness of the 50 Cent game, Blood on the Sands. But supposedly it's a pretty good game.
It is supposed to be a halfway decent
game. Because the first one, he's just on the streets. Second one, he goes to the Middle East.
Yeah.
And fights terrorists or something. I have no idea. Anyway, but we love 50. Got some Disney games in here. You got a few Dead or Alive games. You got Lego Lord of the Rings. You got Manhunt. You got the Max Payne. You got a couple Mortal Kombat's on here. Quake Arena Arcade. I'm not familiar with that one. Ridge Racer 6 for the Namco fans like Ian. Something called Screw Jumper. Skate 2. Oh, you get a bunch of Star Wars games. That's pretty big. You get the Jedi Knight 2. That was on 360?
No, that was on original Xbox.
I was going to say that's that old. Okay. Clone Wars, Revenge of the Sith.
Original Xbox.
Starfighter. Then you get these FPS boost games, which it gets the old games and makes them like 60 frames, and you get like HDR support or whatever. There's a bunch of them there. Looks like on the first person. Well, Alan Wake isn't a first person shooter, but it's a first person, so I guess that makes sense. Same thing. I guess you get a better frame rate versus the original. You get slightly better color range and things like that. But I think I read something you can turn it on or off if you don't want
Max Payne is third person.
Huh?
Max Payne is third person.
Did I say Max Payne?
I thought you did.
Max Payne was part of the backwards compatibility, but not this FPS boost. It's a different list.
My brain is scrambled.
Yeah, FPS boost has some of those games, but it's not. It's
aha.
Gotcha. So like for like Alan Wake's on that list. Some of the Fallout games, Gears of War, for example. So I read that you can turn it off because originally the HDR thing was just, okay, you have to play it like that. But if you want to play the original, which we'll get into later, but now it's an option to turn off the FPS boost or the HDR that's attached to it. Yeah. And it's the same thing with the cloud gaming, which I should probably get on at some point when I play new games again. The Xbox cloud gaming sounds really, really nice.
Yeah. Speaking of wanting to play original versions, speaking of, GTA Definitive Edition came out, and woo lordy.
It's what we all feared, basically.
Yeah. So I was actually kind of looking forward to this because I have not played a single minute of GTA 3, Vice City, San Andreas. I haven't played a...
What?
I have not played a...
What?
I have not played a minute of a GTA game since they went 3D.
What?
Just never had any interest.
What?
I know.
That's insane.
Yep. So I was kind of looking forward to it. I was like, sweet, I'll just get this 3-pack and get all the PlayStation 2 ones and your Xbox ones and play through them. But no. Now, the GTA Definitive games apparently are just miserable. I don't know if people have been looking at it, but there's been bugs, been a lot of problems. It looks like basically they took the cheapest route forward, and based on what I've been reading, it looks like they had AI basically smooth out and handle the upscaling.
Yes, for a lot of it.
For most of the game.
And they're based on, it sounds like mobile ports.
Yes.
Engines of the mobile ports, which were problematic to begin with. So you're making a port of a problematic port.
So they
didn't do it from scratch. It's a fucking cheap, the cheapest thing possible.
Right, and I can't believe they have the fucking hell? Balls.
Rockstar. Who has billions of dollars.
Rockstar, who made their entire name. I mean,
off of GTA.
You can like other things Rockstar has done. That's fine. Their table tennis game was fantastic on the 360. But they made their name on GTA.
They should be ashamed as a company.
Especially because they removed all the old versions from stores. You can't buy them anymore. This definitive version is all you have. Definitive, they have the balls to say.
I mean, say well about Microsoft when they put out those you know all those Halo remakes. They weren't as bad as this.
Oh, they were nice.
Yeah, like they put in, they realized this is our franchise. We have to treat this with love. This is what it looks like is an abomination. I saw Digital Foundry did a great comparison. It's like 40 minutes long comparing all the differences, even between the Xbox, original Xbox at the time, that were slightly better than the PS2 and different. They went really in-depth. We're talking stuff like not having, on the newest version, having fucking taillights when the originals have.
Oh, you said like brake lights aren't on the originals.
There's no taillights. There's like brake lights, but there's no taillights at night, for example. Things like that. The rain effect, it looks miserable. The rain effect on this new version are the brightest white streaks possible to interpret as an interpretation of rain, and it follows it's locked to the camera. It's not in the environment. It's on the camera. So like it'll turn and move as you do, and you'll see it like not hit objects or go in between objects. It's fucked up. It looks terrible. It looks worse than almost 20-year-old GTA 3. I think GTA 3 is 20 years old. It looks worse than it. It blinds you when you're playing. There's no art. There's no consistent art style like with the original. See
the faces all look really weird.
They look weird. There's no uniformity of how things look. Like there was like cool motion effects in the original, and there was that like, kind of like greenish bluish filter effect that was like cinematic in a way to sort of cover up some maybe the low res filters. They don't do any of that with this version. It's just we're going to upscale it, but the upscaling still looks like trash. So here you go.
So what I was reading was that a lot of what they think they used was like you know, basically AI smoothing. People talk a lot about an effect. I think it was called like they subdivided basically the surface or something like that. Uh-huh. Subdivisions is the best Rush.
So oh yeah,
that's for sure. But so that's why like there's the pictures going around of like the dude on the bike and his arms got like multiple joints. It's because they used that on there and it broke the arm because they tried to smooth it, but it ended up creating additional like. It looks wavy. It looks like a Cheeto. The big one that I saw was there was a donut shop called Tough Nut Donuts in, I think it's San Andreas.
Okay.
And it shows a donut on top of the building. And then next to it is a nut, like, you know, a nut that you screw, a six-sided hexagonal nut. And, of course, the donut's not perfectly round because in the original version, it's you know, PlayStation 2 or an Xbox, so it's a little polygonal. They shoved it through smoothing, so now the donut is round, but the nut itself is round. You can see where it's subdivided on the surfaces just rounded out the nut. So the visual joke is lost, too, because they applied no, like, care to it.
I saw in this video from Digital Foundry, so the upscaling even fucked up, like, letters on, like, posters on the street because they didn't bother to double check. So this was literally a plaster filter job. It's sloppy as hell. It's like, oh yeah, you get like more dynamic shadows in this version. You get more dynamic lights and shadows on like street lights and stuff at night. It's like, yeah, but now there's stuff like the headlights before looked okay 20 years ago. Now the headlights have like these horizontal lines in them for no reason. It looks horrible. And that's why I go back to people wanting to like upscale all the old games. It's like, if you enjoyed it when it came out, there's no reason you still can't enjoy that game. It still looks fine. I was looking at the comparison. When I was looking at the comparison shots on the PS2, I thought that wasn't the PS2. I said, oh, this looks better than the PS2. No, it looked fine on the PS2. It looked fine. You accepted that there was low-res polygons on there. You accepted it. And then, of course, like I said, the Xbox One looked a little bit better back then when it came out. Like, for example, like on the Xbox, they added fingers to the hand models so that they didn't have on the PS2. So the Xbox probably was the best version of that one at the time when it came out. Slightly more powerful than the PS2. Did a little bit more there. But there was even other stupid things I saw in this comparison. So, like, you know, the beginning of, like, missions or segments, they put the title on the screen in GTA games. On the original games, they put them at the bottom. They put them at the bottom for no reason at all. Like, no reason. In this version, they put them in the middle so it covers up what you're looking at in the cutscene, what have you, and they linger for far too long. And again, there's just no reason to make changes like this. There's no reason to do these dumb changes. And it's almost like Rockstar just said, we'll just farm this out and who the fuck cares how it ends up. That's how I look at this.
Oh, yeah.
What a disaster. Mm-hmm. Like, if you care about the legacy of your company, you would look into this. But no, at this point, it's obviously all shareholders and, oh, we're making so much money on GTA Online that we don't have to worry about coming out with GTA 6 for until, like, I don't know, at this point, it's going to be like 5 years probably. I think they're starting to work on it, but it's going to be like several years. So it's like, it's ridiculous.
And I thought
play the originals.
Someone pointed out, I thought it was, well, you can't now. And that's the thing.
Well, you can not
right.
With this.
Someone pointed out that Rockstar took a shot at CD Projekt Red last year about Cyberpunk.
How dare they after this? This is a game that's been finished.
I mean, you can take that shot, but you can't. But then you can't the next year release this garbage into the wild
for a game that you were just updating the resolution on and you weren't recreating a game from scratch.
But this,
I can't believe I'm not taking Project Red side here, but holy shit!
Oh yeah, no, neither am I.
This should have been a slam dunk or closer to a slam dunk. Yeah.
All it proves is that, you know, upscaling and stuff, like, there is no easy way to do it. You have to go in and you have to do it with care. This reminds me of, like, the early days of, like, HD TVs and 2D games getting ported to places like Xbox Live Arcade, and they would just get these garbage smoothing filters thrown over them that looked awful and completely ruined everything. Yeah, it's just, and then over time, they started taking their time and upscaling properly on these 2D games, and now we have these amazing-looking 2D games again. You got to take the same care with the 3D stuff.
I cannot. You have to look how bad the rain is in this game. Like,
saw.
I mean, how did someone at Rockstar see that and say that's acceptable? Like, you couldn't even take down the contrast to like 20% of it. Like it hurts your eyes. Like, there's no way to play that. There's no way you can play that when it starts to rain. It looks horrible. It looks horrible.
Apparently, modders have already a day ago. Modders have fixed the rain in the definitive edition.
But if
that's not fucked up. It's going to be like Bethesda releasing game. Modders are going to be the people who have to fix this and make it okay. And I mean, if that's the case, you're never going to want to own this on a console.
Or you wait like 3 years until it's patched out. All this stuff. Again, I would not.
Rockstar's got to do something.
I would not be as pissed. But they took away the original version. Why not have it? They have the original version available in this package.
Yeah, the fucking
why not?
The hubris, the balls.
This is it goes back to George Lucas updating things and getting rid of the original. Like, we don't care if you update it. Have the original version available.
Pride cometh before the fall, and all that
goes back to fucking Star Wars.
Right, that could have been almost a full topic.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's next? WADA.
WADA. What a country. WADA announced they are going to start to release population reports. Not for everything right away, of course. Do your slow clap here. So obviously WADA's gotten a lot of heat since the summer and allegations of insider trading. And the founder of Heritage Auctions being involved with WADA, which is, I mean, it is a thing. And Carl Jobe's landmark video. We've been talking about this stuff for like 2.5 years at this point. So I guess public pressure has finally caved after the company was sold. So it doesn't even matter that much anymore. And they've already gotten away with murder that they're going to be releasing some population reports here, Ian.
Population reports. We actually said on a previous podcast, I think maybe even the last podcast, I was asked, is there anything that WADA can do to redeem themselves?
This is
the first thing that I said. I think going forward, any collectible grading company, I think population reports are important. Otherwise, you're selling people on a hope and a dream and not giving them any of that information to make that decision.
Well, it's like blind gambling.
Intelligently.
You don't even know what the odds, like theoretical odds are.
If you're gambling, you should know the odds. Then that's what you're
doing. The casinos tell you the odds.
Yeah.
You know the odds when you gamble. Mm-hmm. For most of this stuff. This is they sent out an email. As you may have heard, we were acquired by Collectors Universe in July. It was literally the week after the big auction that was all set up. They all planned it. And we're excited to share some big improvements to WADA Games. They're moving to Southern California. We're excited to join PSA and PCGS at Collectors Universe headquarters and be able to utilize the company's resources, blah, blah, blah. They're going to grow up, blah, 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 blah. So they're doing it all in-house. We were equally excited to bring to you the first ever WADA population reports later this month. The initial one will be limited to NES games. Why? And will not include seal ratings at first. Again, why? But more because you have it all already in your database. But more games and more complete population reports will soon follow. We'll give you the opportunity to provide feedback. Correct any errors and tell us what you like. Correct any errors? You are the people that have all the information. What errors could there be for us to correct? It is an exciting and much needed step for WADA and our community, and we want your input from the start. So they no longer could hide the fact that it's totally bullshit that they didn't do this. They did this to pump up the market.
Sure.
There's no other reason why you don't have population reports. There's no other reason to hide what comes through your factory of what you're grading here. Because even Heritage Auctions had to say, yes, we need this. Even Heritage Auctions, who's making a lot of money with this, realizes that overall you need this because there could be a crash potentially if you wait too long and this stuff comes out. You realize, oh shit, there's 78 of these games that I thought were like super rare.
1.5 million Mario 64 pushed their hand. I mean, they had to.
It's nuts.
They had to at that point before everyone started thinking they had gold.
But like the damage has been done. Except the damage has been done. That person has spent the $1.5 million. They lost $1 million probably at least. That's being generous. Yes, it's their risk to take. But like people getting caught up into this stuff is the only reason this stuff gets big. It's the only reason a lot of the crypto stuff gets big. It's all the FOMO. It's all the hype. It's a psychology thing that happens. Your rationale goes out the window. And that's how people get away with fraudulent behavior when it comes to a lot of this stuff. Their rational thinking goes away. So it's a start, but it's nuts that it won't be every single console. I really want to see how many Spider-Mans they have on 2600. I really want to see how many.
Oh, that's going to be my favorite.
That's going to be your favorite?
Yeah, I need to know how many Spider-Mans they have.
There's no reason why you would include the seal ratings. You have these all in a database already. Just make it a searchable database online. Well, that's an excuse. I'm reading the email here for the sound. But correcting any errors, what errors would be? That's nuts to me. Like you're not giving me any faith if you're supposed to be the authority that you're going to come out and we need to correct errors and tell us what you want to see next. This is what I want to see next, Ian. Everything. Every console, everything that's passed through you, every rating, every seal rating. You have all the information. Release it all. There's no reason you have to drip feed this out except you're trying to protect your own ass. Why else would you drip feed it out? It should be all searchable. It was searchable before with a bug on the website. There was like a back end bug or something weird. People were getting the information before. Make it searchable. Am I wrong?
No. I mean, I don't know what they have to do to get it prepared to put out there. But yes, I'm sure they could just do a whole database.
Do a searchable database. It's not rocket science here. Ian, I got a nice Game & Watch. I bought the second one. Game & Watch. Game & Watch. I got the Legend of Zelda Game & Watch. For the 35th anniversary of The Legend of Zelda, they did one last year for Super Mario Brothers. I was impressed with the quality of the Super Mario Brothers. I think you were too.
Sure.
Last year, yeah. It's your traditional Game & Watch, very sturdy. It has the USB C connector, which Nintendo likes to do the Cs. They don't do the micros, which is nice because C is now the standard.
I was going to say everything is switched to C.
Thank God, the micro ones are horrible. You get your cute little timing on there. You can set your time to Legend of Zelda, Zelda 2, but not Link's Awakening, which is also one of the three games on here, or four technically if you count the Vermin game, which I got 144 on. That's Vermin's fun. It's more fun than the juggling the ball, by the way. So this is, again, a nice little package. As you can see, Ian, you can select the English or Japanese version
That's pretty cool.
Of the first two games, and the third game you can get the other European languages. I guess at that point they had different languages. But what's interesting is I double checked. You get the different music. You get the Famicom disc versions.
Oh, nice.
Of the Zelda 1 and Zelda 2. So that's a nice little touch. They don't have to do that.
That is a nice little touch.
But of course, then it's in Japanese when you go around, so it's hard to play.
Yeah.
Unless you know the game. So what I like about the Game & Watch series that they're doing on here, and maybe they'll continue, is that you can do a lot of these, especially now that they put the select and start buttons above the B and A, you basically have four buttons at your disposal. I don't think they're ever going to add any triggers to the top to do Super Nintendo games. No. But I think for the 8-bit, which is Game Boy and NES, I think you can do a lot with this. And having the select and start right above is really nice, especially if you're playing Zelda. I imagine you're shooting arrows, the select's right there. Same thing with like Metroid, it'd be easy to do that, or with even Mike Tyson's Punch Out. But no, this is a cute little thing. I will say this though, it's a little bit. I didn't play Zelda for more than like 20 minutes. I played Link's Awakening for like a half hour. Really fun game. Don't yell at me. I never played it really before. I got to get into it. But I love the style of Link's Awakening. It's a really cute combination of the original Legend of Zelda and Link to the Past in terms of the style and aesthetic. I love it so far. And it seems like there's a cute little sense of humor.
It's my favorite.
What's your favorite of the series?
Right. I love Link's Awakening.
Don't spoil it. I'm in the forest right now looking for the key.
It's amazing.
Whatever. I'm getting lost. I'm in the Lost Forest getting lost. So, yeah, it's enjoyable. It was $50. Now the question of course is, will we see more of these? Everyone's asking that. Will they come out in these? It's been one a year. It's going to be a great stocking stuff for Christmas seller. $50. I think it's a nice price. Probably could be a little cheaper, but whatever. It's high quality. I do like the fact that they updated the box. Let me go get it. The box, it has a built-in stand on the back, so you can display it here, and it has a colored Triforce here. And also secures the USB-C in there. So it's overall a nicer design package than the Super Mario Brothers. They did a nice job with this. They didn't have to do something like this, but it's a nice little display on here.
Nice.
So that's cool. You want to take a look at it real quick while I talk more about it? So, yeah, I don't have much more to say about it. If you want to play it, Zelda 1 and Zelda 2 is probably a good way to do it. I will say this. I don't know if it'll be more straining on the eyes over time, because unlike Super Mario Brothers, where you're looking at usually movement in one direction. On this, you're looking at directions in all four. I think that might toy with your eyes a little bit. I'm trying to look out for people's eye health. Mm. It's so small, and you're playing. You can change from the TV widescreen or 4:3 to like this to the pixel perfect square.
Wow.
You can do either one.
Nice.
So, but I think it might be harder to play these games for a long period of time. You should definitely take a break, because like, you got to look at like 8 Octoroks on the screen with little Link shooting around. That's a lot different than looking at just one Mario jumping around.
Yeah.
It's a lot more to focus your eyes on.
I could understand that.
So that's the only thing I'll say. So that's why Pat has awful vision, or used to, because of the NES. So take your breaks. They warn you, 10 minutes every hour. Take your break on that. So do you think there'll be a future? They'll do like one of these a year for anniversary, or just for the hell of it, we'll do like, we'll do a Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
I think people are reading too much into the one a year, since the anniversaries for both Mario and Zelda have gotten, were successive. But if they wanted to do another anniversary, Kirby's 30th anniversary is next year.
So they had obviously the NES one, you had Game Boy games.
You could do Kirby NES and Kirby 1 and 2 from the Game Boy.
I mean,
throw Kirby's Pinball on there.
They already got the tech. They got it worked out.
Yeah.
It's not that much work.
Make a pink shell around for it, and off it goes.
It'll be the first one that didn't exist as a Game & Watch, but I think they're going to do at least one a year going forward. I think they're going to sell.
Yeah.
They're going to sell. And you can get them easily. You can get, they're not like, people were feared the Super Mario one would be hard to get. No, you can get them readily.
Mm-hmm.
They made probably millions of these things. So I think it's interesting. The other thing I want to touch upon is that the reason I think these are cute and why I think they really touch people is that, unlike getting an NES Classic or playing Switch Online, playing an original Legend of Zelda, you're playing the old games in an old way. Like, this is officially a way you would have played it in the late 80s. The game matches the technology of the time period. Yeah, it's now USB, whatever. But besides that, though, it's a total transportation back in time. Like, totally. Versus playing, you can play Legend of Zelda 1,000 ways. That's what makes these a little bit more interesting to me, if that makes sense. Plus, everyone loves the handhelds. Ian loves the handhelds.
Yeah, I think just making it a physical object is what makes it more interesting. Yeah. It's neat to hold.
And they're all well done. Like I said, these are all well done.
Yeah.
Sure, people are going to try to hack them or what are further games.
They found that there just wasn't much
was room
worth to hack in the like in the Mario one. I don't know if the Zelda one's going to be any different.
They put,
but
like, only
there
a
just
Meg
was
in there.
there was very little space. There wasn't enough room to really do anything. You could maybe get a couple other games on there, but no. I looked into it after it came out, and no one was really doing anything with it. So
good, keep it pure. Let's keep it pure. So Kirby, Punch-Out's not popular enough. Maybe Metroid? Maybe do a Metroid one?
I mean, you would only be able to do Metroid on the NES because the Metroid on Super Nintendo uses more buttons. They could do Metroid in Metroid 2.
Yeah. They can do.
They've been putting at least, well, yeah, you're right. It's 2 to 3 games because Mario was only 2 games. Mario right? really should have had 2 and 3 on it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
That was really strange.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. To that, I guess they want to celebrate the original anniversary of the first game, but yeah, I think that they did follow-ups. I think they would all sell, like 1 or 2, maybe 2 a year. I think they would do gangbusters.
Donkey Kong,
can you do one and put in the fucking cement factory? can you do that? There's a ROM that they fixed and put in the cement factory. Can we do that? And that would be kind of cool if they did that. If they did what 1, 2, and 3, they always forget about poor old Stanley. He doesn't.
Stanley.
They'll basically give you Donkey Kong Classics. They won't give you a separate ROM.
No.
They'll give you the classics with the menu select there. If they did that, though, I guess, there's the Game Boy ones. I guess you can throw a couple of those on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Fiori is a new perspective on performance apparel. It's perfect if you're sick and tired of traditional workout gear. We're not talking about sweatpants or track suits. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't feel or look like it. If you want to wear it all the time, want to go to the store, want to go to the movies, want to go get something to eat, you can. Since it's comfortable and it looks good. It might be more comfortable than what you're wearing right now. And the clothes are incredibly versatile. It can be used for just about any activity. You want to go running in it. You want to do some yoga. You want to train in it. But you can just lounge around, play some games, run some errands, go to the food store. Whatever you want to do, you won't look or feel out of place.
Whether you're camping, hanging out, just enjoying a day at home, Vuori's clothes are perfect for what you're doing. For instance, take a look at the Sunday Performance Jogger. These are the softest joggers that you're ever going to own, and they look just as good on the treadmill as they do on the couch watching basketball.
You got the Ponto Short. You can get cozy in them. The perfect lounge or work-from-home shorts made with their signature Dream Knit fabric. Lightweight and smooth like butter. The shorts have a soft, stretchy material. And the classic elastic waistband. And the Seaside Hoodie. It's my favorite. It's a classic zip-up hoodie with next-level comfort and made with four-way stretch and a soft brushed fleece. It was created to accompany activity as well as adventure. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at vuoriclothing.com/CU podcast. That's VUORI clothing.com/CU podcast. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but you'll enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to VUORI clothing.com/CU podcast and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Oh, sliding into the podcast.
That's more like a shimmy than a slide.
Main podcast.
That's a Steph Curry shimmy.
Amico, television Amico. Y'all know what the Amico is. Y'all know what the Amico is. There was another kind of preview of the Amico that came from, what is the name of this actual website?
It's Heise Online.
Heise Online.
The motherland, Deutschland.
And the translated title of the article is Intellivision Amico Tried Out. The console with the Wollmilchschau controller. Now, what Wollmilchschau is it refers to a mythical beast in German folklore that I believe it means wool, milk, meat. So basically, it's a mythical animal that does everything. So
it has the picture I'm looking at has a pig's head. It has like a rooster's tail. It has cow udders and like duck feet.
So they're calling the controller a mythical can do it all is basically what they're saying. This article definitely reads less advertorial than some of the previous ones did. I'd say this is probably if you consider yourself genuinely middle of the road on the Amico or undecided, I think this article is probably a good one for you to read because it addresses some serious concerns without being over the top or incendiary, I guess. And
it gives you the facts. It doesn't sugarcoat. The second paragraph brings up company boss Tommy Tallarico threatened a U.S. meeting with legal action that had reported a leak from the developer portal. It doesn't gloss over the bad behavior,
right?
Of the CEO, for example,
doesn't gloss over bad behavior and definitely says some things. It definitely has its concerns. So there are two things that I really want to point out from this article that, and one of them that I think is something we haven't really mentioned, but is important to bring up. So they talk about the games that are on the Amico, and they talk about how this is supposed to be a system, you know, that is easy to pick up and play, you know, for grandma, grandpa, mm-hmm. you know, your older relatives, your parents and such. And they talk about how they played a little bit of skiing, Astro Smash and Evil Knievel. And they talked about the controller. So the controller has the directional disc. It has the shoulder buttons. It has the buttons underneath, and it has mm-hmm. the touchscreen. But it can also be oriented left to right,
vertically
right
or horizontal.
Left, vertically. Yeah. And they talk about how the games share there's no through line on the controls, basically.
There's no overall
cohesiveness
of the control schemes.
So basically, in Missile Command. So basically, he says, you know, you pick up Evil Knievel and you can use the gyro or you can use the disc. And they talk about how the gyro seems very spotty on the controller in the article. They talk about how it doesn't seem sensitive enough or too sensitive, maybe. It's jittery.
Okay.
But then they talk about how Missile Command, you aim with the touchpad. And then you fire by using the disc, by pressing left or right on the disc.
For the three different fire missile silos, sure.
Right. And then they talk about how skiing, you just use the control stick.
But not the gyro.
Which would have made sense.
Because skiing, you lean.
So if you're trying to make a console that is, you know, usable by everyone, you want there to be some sort of through line so that when they learn the controls of one game, they can apply it to the next game that they play.
Especially if these are quick gaming experiences.
If they're quick gaming experiences, they're going to be changing up, you know, what they're playing often. And, you know, what they say is that there appears to be too much of an attempt to use gimmicky things on this controller, and there is no, there is no cohesive feel to it. So they actually think it would be harder for people who aren't used to video games because they can orient the controller this way or this way, or they were moving at one point with this, but now they're moving with this. Whereas, honestly, and we've always given Tommy shit for this because it's true, there's nothing that confusing about a modern controller.
No.
Once you learn how to play one game with a modern controller, you kind of... They're designed by people who are smart, and they don't design these things to be hard to use. That's against the design ethos. They design these things. They design the games and the controls so that people can apply what they know from one game to another. It's why once you learn how to play one game on like a Switch, you can pick up, you know what your forward button is. You know what your cancel button is. You know you're moving with this. You know shoulder buttons are usually going to be where you shoot when you're playing a first-person shooter. There are things that pass on, and there's nothing like that happening here.
We've had 40 years of market research into game controllers by the companies themselves trying and sometimes failing. There's a reason why they did away with the Intellivision disc because it sucked back in 1979. They did away with like the chunky controllers with the keypads that they tried to do on three different consoles. They tried to do that. And even the chunky joystick that the ColecoVision had, which was okay, but not the best thing. There's a reason why when Nintendo said, we're going to do a D-pad, that every fucking console after that had to do a D-pad. They figured out this is what works for the most amount of people. It's easy to figure out, and we're going to carry this forward.
Well,
like it was a natural progression.
And I want to point out that the Switch was, they used the remote and the nunchuck, you know, and it was to, you know, it's supposed to be easy the Wii. But they
had a D-pad.
But they abandoned that too. They didn't keep up with it. Why? Because the controller always shows itself to be the best input method for video games.
They still had face buttons available. They had what worked just in case a game needed it. They didn't just say, well, you know, we had this forever. We're going to do this. No, they realize this is what people are used to. We've played games now for 40 years, a lot of us, sometimes more. Why abandon what you know works? You know these things work. You know that a face button is the best way to play a platformer. Not what they say, spongy, which was on our fear. Spongy buttons,
yeah, spongy
on the top.
Shoulder buttons.
We always complained. We always said, are these going to be clicky buttons or spongy? A spongy shoulder button is the worst way to play an action game.
Yeah.
It's harder to press it multiple times. You don't get that direct feedback when you're pressing it back and forth. It's the only thing that's bad. You even can't even call them spongy, but the Super Nintendo shoulder buttons are the worst thing about that controller, and the rest of the controller is fantastic. Sometimes they can be a little bit off. So it's hard to do shoulder buttons properly, but it's not what you want for a game where you're constantly pressing them. You do not want to use shoulder buttons, at least those old school ones, when you're constantly pressing shit for a platformer. You don't want it to also, like, for example, for like Finnegan Fox, hit the fucking button, the touchpad to jump, for example, is miserable. And I think they pointed that out in this. I think they mentioned that here. Or someone did?
What?
There was Finnegan Fox in this one, or someone was talking about the event in Boston, how it's hard to keep jumping in Finnegan Fox. That's why someone in Boston pointed out. It's hard to keep jumping when you hit the touch screen to jump.
Hmm.
Things like that, that there's a reason why this stuff was never done before. There's a reason why video game companies stayed away or shied away from these, because it was tried before, or they realized we can't do this. We can't do this.
The other thing I wanted to point out real quick was just that basically this article or this section of it. Nevertheless, the Amico controller left an ambivalent impression. Can do pretty much everything, but none of it exceptionally well, which is, I think, what we all have known. The controller is really the fucking albatross around Tommy's neck on this one, on the Amico.
Well, it's also the price being horrible, which they point out in the article at the end. It's going to be, they point out the Switch is about the same amount of money.
Yeah.
What are you going to play, at that point?
But, I mean, we've heard that internally, the controller is not well loved.
No.
I mean, they're spending so much time, after all of those, the Turkey Point, get together with 15 people or whatever it
Turkey
was.
Point?
Thanksgiving Point. They dedicate so much time to people being like, the controller's fine, it's good, it's not bad.
It's not broken.
Like, the controller is obviously a problem.
Now they like to say that, well, there's no lag in this. Well, there was 10 months ago, but now that it's gone, we fixed it, that means the controller works great. No, it doesn't. It means you have a functional controller. It doesn't mean it's going to work well with your games, but congratulations for not, trying to trick people and having upside-down controllers anymore in your gameplay videos. They also talked, this is an important thing about the German influence on this console. I didn't know it was this amount. Hans Ippich, who's the head of, there's the Intellivision Germany company, which from what I hear, they're the real company behind this in terms of like the financials.
Right.
They're the one managing this. 17 of the 25 launch games, they claim to be 25, 17 are being developed by German studios. 17
of them. That's 25 launch games now?
They said there's 25 launch games. I don't think there's going to be 25 launch games, but 17. They brought up skiing. They brought up Space Strikers, which is going to come out on the Switch as well. But we talked about how, again, there was a Bavarian Arts and Entertainment grant where several of their games, like skiing and cornhole, and I believe Astro Smash.
I believe all of their pack-in games, with the exception
I think it's all of them.
Of...
But it's at least four of them. They come from German grant money. So without the German influence, you would not have a console. You would not have these games being developed.
Right.
You'd have almost no packing games. That's an important key, to know the health of this company. We always talk about whether or not they have to pay back that Bavarian grant money and how that grant even works. They call it the all-rounder controller. So the orientation of the display only changes after pressing the home button, so that it does not change accidentally while playing. That's not bad. Loudspeaker and microphone, like a vibration motor, can be switched off, are also part of the controller. They talked about the LEDs real quick. Let me find that. That was an interesting part when I read this article about the LEDs. Here we go. An LED around the controller, this is talking about Astro Smash. An LED around the control disc flashes in time with the game or shows which piece you are controlling. In Astro Smash, for example, a blue light signals that the fate of the blue spaceship is currently being steered.
That's just bad translation. It just means that it glows blue to represent you're the blue ship.
But you don't know you're the blue ship. You have to look at the controller to realize you're the blue ship.
I'm sure you would know. It's just a gimmicky thing.
Just to use the LED.
Yes,
I was trying. Exactly. I'm like, okay.
No, I think it's just weird translation. It's not saying it does anything special.
The visual aid is really handy, especially since it can get chaotic on the television. I don't understand that. Like, looking at your controller is not going to let you know on screen which one is it. It has to be blue on screen. Otherwise, how do you know what you're controlling? That seems like a really weird stretch to think that the LED is going to help you for something like
that. I think that's exactly what it is, though. I think it's just them stretching, trying to find something.
That's handy. Carefree console for parents. Okay. Titles have a maximum age rating of 6 years old. I guess that means for the minimum. The max minimum is 6 years old. No YouTube apps or even a web browser. This would ensure that parents can put Amico in their children's room without any worries. All games are specifically developed for the Amico or adapted and strictly curated. Which is funny because when you say put the Amico in their children's room, kids nowadays, a lot of them don't even have a TV. Or even if they have a children's room, they have their pad, their iPad.
Right.
That's their entertainment medium. Or their phone. That's their world. It just shows you how out of touch even an article trying to be positive about it can be like, well, children's room, big TVs and hooked up consoles. Now,
like I said, a lot of this is, and I see this with, I think, some well-meaning people too, who have gotten behind the Amico and don't really push it,
sure,
but have been like, oh, I'm kind of interested in it. And they say stuff like this without realizing that it sounds nice, but it functionally means nothing in the modern era.
This isn't 2004.
It's not 1994. We're beyond the need for this, unless you just want to spend money. Everything that you could possibly want out of the Amico is available on the Switch.
But here's a strike against it from the article writer. The project does not always succeed. In the game menus in particular, it was often completely unclear whether it was necessary to press one of the buttons or operate the touchscreen. There are no standardized rules for navigation. So that's a great point. It goes back to the control scheme setup. This is the problem when you have a hodgepodge system where you get grant money, you try to hire people, you do ports of games that pre-exist on Switch or mobile devices. These aren't built from the ground up, some of these games. Or you're just making sure you're trying to go for quantity over quality. And at the same time, you have no one on staff that maybe help or give them rules. You have your 10 commandments for games. How about every game, this is how you should navigate menus?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. So, you know, this proves that they say things like, oh, it's a family console and we want it to be for the people who don't know how to game. They can say that and that sounds nice in theory. But if you don't actually implement design into your console that makes it easy for people, doesn't matter if all of your games are fucking depthless fucking shoebox
shark
if they can't figure out how to get into the game.
That's a great point. That's one thing we never brought up. I brought the fact how I think we did there was no cohesive look to design the actual look of
no,
the game.
It looks as thrown together as it is.
This is damning from this article. In the case of several titles, it took a few minutes despite the instructions for all players to successfully dial into a title. That's bad.
Yeah, that's real bad.
If you got to pass around, if you have four controllers, pass around these controllers, have mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, little Johnny and Sue figure out how to do this. We're talking all experience levels, all different experiences, playing games in the past or not. Now you have to give them this what they say is not even a very ergonomic controller, awkward controller
to
hold.
It's awkward to hold.
That's not going to be your quick and easy, let's go. That's not going to be Wii Bowling. Here, grandma, swing it. Hold the button, swing it. That's your Wii Bowling, right? That's it.
Right. I don't have a whole lot more to say other than you'll notice that this is not one of the articles that Tommy has been touting around the internet like he does with all the other ones.
Yeah, the Republic investors, I don't think they're getting this one. Let's have an update to Republic. I'm sure they want to know about all the physical products that have sold. Oh, no, there has been an update since September 30th. On Republic. These people gave you millions of dollars. They're not good enough to get an update even every other week, let alone every month. They can't even do it every month. It's bad. There's a positive. Pool and Billiards showed how they could use the controller well. You can first roughly position the cue using the touch screen before fine-tuning it with the control disc. If you want, you can set the exact point of impact on the ball on the touch screen. That was from Danish developer studio there. Pool Legends has already gained experience with the development of touchscreens for smartphones. Okay, so they already had experience with games on touchscreen, so that's how they can do it there. Ipish has recognized this as a problem and promises improvement. Three of the games pre-installed at the launch that Highs Online has not been able to try out should use the gyroscope and touchscreen more intensely. As an example, Intellivision names, let's say, Farkle, in which dice are thrown from the touchscreen onto the monitor, and Cornhole, on the other hand, you should throw bags as precisely as possible using motion controls. Yes, if they get the motion controls working, since they had to rework them. In future developments, Intellivision wants to place more value on the fact that the special abilities of the controllers are used. I think when you have this sort of marketing from controller out versus game first, I think that's, again, the sort of like you said, the albatross. You should be selling a console again on the games. What games are you?
Yeah, everything they've tried to sell this console on has not been on the games, which is what's crazy. They tried to sell it on the console, on the controller. They tried to sell it on the look. They tried to sell it on nostalgia appeal when they're not trying to sell it as a all-in-one family savior.
Here's the thing about the lag here. We didn't notice any noticeable delay between input and response. The input felt just as low as in latency as other game consoles. Great, they figured it out. Some games were a bit sluggish, but that was always due to the software implementation. What does it mean? The games were a bit sluggish, but that was due to the software implementation.
It means that the games aren't finely tuned.
So that means like they're not being responsive still, or they're not being frames per second. That seems like that was something Hans told him to say, that it was due to software, not hardware. That's a weird thing. How would they know that if they're just reviewing the game with a software implementation?
Again, I think it's a translation thing. I don't think there's enough in that article that I don't think Hans told them to say something. I think we're just not understanding it properly.
Okay, but it did say sluggish though. That's a very key word. They were a bit sluggish in the games. Okay. Here you talk about the ambivalent impression of the controller. This is a great point here. Maybe it would have been smarter if Intellivision had committed itself to a single gimmick, like they said for the Playdate, in which some games were specially designed for the special crank control. Instead, Amiga wants to be able to do everything and pays for this flexibility with the problem areas mentioned. There you go. So again, the controller is the death knell to this console, and the price. That's the 1-2 combination here. I mean, and the fact that a lot of these games are, you know, their mobile quality, and some of them are ports are pretty easy. I mean, there's a lot of bad problems here. But that controller, my lord. Yeah. I don't think people would be nearly as critical of this whole thing if you had more standard. Hell, if the controllers were almost like a direct knockoff of the freaking Wii controllers, I don't think people would complain as much compared to this. Because at least you know that functioned. And people, you know, you can play different types of games, either using for motion or as a platformer, holding the controller. You can still play a Super Mario game on that. At least you had that going on with this. But there goes spongy buttons. What I feared, spongy buttons is the worst when it comes to playing action games. The overloaded Wool Mischel controller in particular still looks half-baked and lacks a clear vision. Many of the games shown are also entertaining for a short time at best, or would work at least as well on other systems. Wow, that sounds like something some dumb hater podcasters probably said. The games could work in other systems.
Mm-hmm.
You could have published these on PS4.
We were called idiots, though, because you need this controller.
You need it. You need it for all these games. You can't do Missile Command in any console.
Mm-mm.
You can't do Shark in any console that exists. You can't do it. You can't do Evil Knievel. You know you can do it on a smartphone. And the game's been out for 5-6 years. All right, anything else to add here?
No.
This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Ho, 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 gentlemen. The holidays came early here at Manscaped, the leading men's hygiene brand. Manscaped just launched new products, including their all-new ultra-premium body wash and a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. It's time to give yourself, or someone who may need it, the gift of beautiful skin, hairs, and balls this holiday season. Go to manscaped.com and use code CUPODCAST for 20% off and free shipping.
Jingle balls to the walls, fellas. Listen up. Untrimmed pubes are a thing of the past, and it's possible you have Santa's beard in your pants, which is why you need Manscaped's Performance Package 4.0. Inside the Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the Signature Lawnmower 4.0. This electric trimmer has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology to reduce cuts on your nuts.
On your chestnuts.
On your chestnuts. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant, moisturizer, and toner. It's time to keep your North Pole feeling fresh. This hygiene bundle will also come with a pair of Manscaped anti-chafing boxers that'll keep your junk feeling fresh all day. The perfect package for your perfect package. Manscaped is going beyond the groin with their new Ultra Premium Body Wash. It's infused with aloe vera and sea salt to keep your skin feeling clean, nice, and moisturized. They also just launched their new 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, which has key ingredients with benefits that include hydrating, nourishing, and conditioning the scalp, plus strengthening your hair at the same time. Tis the season to load up on Manscaped products, so get yourself, your dad, your brother, and friends the best gift of all, the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0.
Ho, ho, ho! Get 20% off and free shipping with the code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code CUPODCAST. Clean up your nuts and make Santa proud this year. All right, Ian.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we had this is a late breaking story. Atari XP.
Yeah, saw that this morning. Atari is releasing physical games again. Physical games. Actual games.
I mean, this isn't a hotel venture or crypto.
I also mean it's not a physical product. It's a physical game.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, but at least Atari's doing something that's like in brand. It's not a speaker hat.
So, you know.
It's on NFT.
He got pushed off to the side. He's doing the crypto business.
He's doing the
now.
Weird shit. The hotel shit. The weird crypto. Shit.
So Atari is under, you know, new ownership. And at first, I think this is great.
Well, they have
is
it new ownership or they have a new the new CEO or new
new CEO. Business.
Yeah.
And at first I think this is pretty great. What are they doing? They're putting out three Atari games that most people have heard of but have never played. They were unreleased games that Howard Scott Warshaw,
our pal Howard,
created in 1980 something, and they would have been due to release in 1983. There's Aqua Venture, which obviously is kind of like shoot sea creatures to so you can get a treasure chest, and the mermaids take you to harder levels. Saboteur, which is a multi-level game, it looks kind of like Taz, and there is Yar's Return, a sequel to Yar's Revenge, that instead of just being horizontal left to right, is actually all around.
Hi, Pat here with the CU Podcast. Ian's left. I have an update to insert in here into the Atari XP segment.
Update.
We were wrong on something. Not our fault. Atari's own website is promoting all three of the XP games as being from Howard Scott Warshaw, including the note that Yar's Return was created by Howard Scott Warshaw and slated for release in 1983. Howard has just informed me that he had nothing to do with Yar's Return whatsoever. He said, and I quote, "I don't know why they're claiming this. It's totally false." He has a sequel of his own on the way that has nothing to do with Atari. And then Aquaventure, as he's listed as the designer of, is nothing he's even ever heard of. He hasn't heard of the game. So Ian and I went too easy on Atari, not just screwing up the limited version of their game versus the card only, but also, for some reason, falsely putting Howard Scott Warshaw's name on all three of these titles when two of them he was never involved with at all. So I'm either going to end the segment with this or I'm going to cut back to us and me being overreactive, as Ian thinks, probably. I don't know. I'll just cut now.
So, so they got these three games from a great developer, games that are probably, and some of these I have played, are, you know, worth playing. These have been released previously by Atari on Evercade cartridges.
Okay.
And I believe they were also probably released on the Atari Game Packs that came out, the four volumes that came out for PS4 and Xbox One.
They threw them on the VCS? Were they packed in the VCS?
No. but these are going to be put on actual Atari cartridges that can be played on the Atari. It gets less exciting the more you learn about it, though. One, Howard Scott Warshaw has no involvement in this.
He confirmed that with me. I asked him, "Hey, how are you involved?" He said, "I was not consulted on this release."
Not consulted.
That's not...
If it's, you know, a matter of, I mean, if he sold rights off ages ago, I realize that's how business works, but you would think, especially if this is to appeal to collectors, you would want some sort of collaboration with the guy who made the games.
He's one of the most famous Atari devs.
I was going to say, he's not unknown.
Yeah.
So having his name officially on this would have been just a big boon to, you know, Atari. Yeah. And I mean, throw the fucking guy some money.
Yeah. I mean, or acknowledge, because when I saw it, that's why when I saw you didn't tweet it out, I was like, well, that's kind of weird. Wouldn't you tweet something out that this was available? And I asked him and he said, yeah, that he wasn't consulted on the release.
Second is the price. Cart only. It's $50.
That's the thing. Is it cart only, or do you get a box?
No, I don't think so. Because if you look at the limited edition, it doesn't show you anything. It just shows you the cart. And if you look at the regular edition, it shows you a box. I think they mixed up the images.
So I'm on Aqua Venture. The first image is a cart. The second one is a GIF of gameplay. I'll get into how that annoys me. The third picture is a cart with a box.
I know. That's for the standard one, right? If you look at the limited edition one, it's just a cart. I think they put the
Jesus Christ, right. Atari. Really? So Did you swap these on your yes. fucking Shopify plugin, Atari?
So I don't think that they're...
Are you kidding me? That's what they did?
I think that's what happened.
You got to be kidding me, Atari. You got to be... That's
if you look at Saboteur,
right.
It shows you...
Saboteur limited edition just shows a cart.
Yes.
The cart shows everything.
Yes.
Okay. I'm getting more annoyed by the second now, because now people might...
So, card only, $50. Limited edition, $150. This limited edition includes a newly manufactured high-quality Atari 2600 cartridge made from special plastics, a premium poster, a printed instruction manual with bonus material, a collectible pin and badge, a certificate of authenticity, and a digital copy of the game playable on the Atari VCS. So you get a digital copy and you get a physical copy. It doesn't say it's a ROM. It just says it's a digital copy of the game playable on the Atari VCS.
Okay. So, if you had a fucking VCS and you're buying this, even though probably the crossover appeal between people that have the VCS is probably so small.
The ROMs for these games have been out forever.
I'm so annoyed now.
So that's annoying. I we're not advertisers for them. I just like what they do. $150 for the exact same sort of package that Retrobit gives you for $60. And Retrobit's $50 package for like cartridge only games comes with a box and manual.
You didn't say one of the best parts of this. They're limiting this to 1983 copies.
I don't care about the limiting of it. I mean, I don't know.
But it shows how craven they are. They put a number on it to make sure that you're going to spend your $150 on that version of it. That's extremely ridiculous. Obviously, it's a year that the game crash happened.
I really don't see the big deal with limiting stuff. People limit shit all the time.
But the fact that they go out of their way to say that, I think it's just the other little twist. We want to spend $150 on something that we should have charged $50 for.
I feel like everything else is worse, but yes. Okay.
Oh, I'm not even started yet. I think it's you say a lot of people know about. I didn't know about these games. I'm not a big Atari guy.
Pay attention to the Atari.
Exactly. When you say
I'm saying a lot of people who pay attention to Atari know what these games are.
But they're hitting a different audience now. Atari has been in the news. They're trying to hit people that this is Atari's first official cart release since the '80s for the 2600. I'm going to put down my money. Now I'm pissed. That they haven't. Has anyone looked at their website? Works there that they switched around the $1,500 version on the website. People might buy the $50 version by accident and think they're getting a box.
Yes,
that's ridiculous. And they should get a box for $50. That's insane. So that's my first problem. Almost no one that's into this sort of stuff wants just the cartridge. Almost no one.
I would argue that. I love buying new releases. I hate buying boxed editions. I want the cartridge.
You want
only
the cart?
Option. Okay. Every Game Boy game that comes out these days that has a cart only option, I buy. If it's only complete, I rarely touch it.
I want to take a poll of that.
I'm just saying that there are people who would just want. I mean, I love having physical stuff. I don't need all the boxes and stuff.
But they're going after the VCS crowd. They're going after people that said, "Oh, I haven't played an Atari game forever. I don't know about the homebrew community. I didn't know that these games came out already."
I don't want a cartridge only for $50. I would maybe do it for $30.
Here's the point: the whole marketing about this thing stinks. I hate the fact that they don't have it doesn't show you real gameplay footage with sound. It's just a freaking GIF. Of all three games, they couldn't. Well, you can't do like a YouTube unlisted link on this here. Is it even on there? Is it even on their YouTube? I'm looking right now. YouTube Atari Saboteur. Everything about this bothers me the more I think about it. The fact that Howard's not involved bothers me. Not saying, you know, obviously if he worked for Atari, they probably own the rights to the game, but come on. You're putting his name on all three games, even though one of the games it sounds like he didn't work on here. I'm more bothered about this. The error thing is just amateur about having the wrong listings back and forth. That doesn't make any sense. But when you go into further, $150 is insane. Because that's like, we talked about how like IM8-Bit had trouble moving their like Mega Man carts and Super Nintendo carts because they were overpriced. And that was for popular games. They were sitting on like those blue Mega Man games forever. What, those $150, $200?
Well, the difference with that too also, I mean, the comment that I made at the time is they're charging $100 for a game you can go to a flea market and get for $20. I mean, they weren't releasing unreleased stuff.
But that was unreasonable though.
Yeah,
and that's a popular franchise. These are Atari games that were, you know, forgotten besides Yars. The forgotten games.
I want to point out that on the FAQ, they really should be better about this. On the FAQ, it says, what comes with a limited edition cartridge? And it says the limited editions for each game include newly manufactured cartridge, poster, manual with bonus material, pin, badge, authenticity, digital copy of the game. Doesn't say anything about a box. So maybe the standard ones do come with a box, but they really should. But there's nothing on the FAQ that says what does a standard edition come with.
And who knows? And you can't tell when you look at the listing.
Right.
That's the problem.
Because the limited one doesn't show anything. And yeah, it's
the limited one just shows the carts. Like you said, they swapped them.
To me,
somehow.
It looks like they swapped them.
So you're paying $50 for a cart.
I will say that there is a slight chance that the $50 one comes with a box and manual, and if it does, fine, because that's what, like I said, that's what Retrobit does for their boxed editions. I don't care if that's the case. If it's just cartridge for $50, though, that's ridiculous.
I think it's just cartridge based upon these listings. Based upon if they switched them, it looks like it. And the fact that it doesn't explicitly say you get a box.
I know. Yeah. It's
it's bad. I mean, I'm not going over the top. I think this should have been a $50 limited edition release. $75, $80 for a limited edition release. And I think that would have been reasonable. Like Ian said, like you want to spend $30 on a cart. There you go. But I think it's done wrong. I hate the fact that I go to this site. I don't see what the game actually, how it actually plays. You can't even give me the boot up screen on this GIF. It just cycles like 8 to 10 seconds or whatever it is. It's just sort of like, it's almost like they don't care. They don't care about the game. They don't care about it. They just said, hey, we got these properties. We're going to get some people that bought the, they're going after the VCS market. They're going after people that thought it was cool and hip to spend $350 on something that they're no longer using to spend $150 on these games. That's how I'm thinking that that's what their design is. I think for people like Ian, we'll get you for $50, but we're going to get all those fools that we got for $400 or more or $500. If you buy all the joysticks, we're going to get you for $150 each. That's what they're thinking. They're going after the Atari hipsters, I think. The people that actually play these games anymore. That's what I think. Disappointed, Atari. Disappointed.
It could have been a thing.
Could have been a contender. Ian, we got a Patreon, don't we?
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go. You pay a little. I write. You get a full video podcast. We do hangouts.
We do an exclusive podcast, Pat versus the Field Mouse this week.
That's right. You get exclusive podcast tidbits.
Talks about bats.
Talk a little bit about bats.
And a Patreon poll.
Patreon poll.
In second place, are sealed game collectors being mistreated? 15%. I don't know why you're not voting by that. I nudged you to vote for that one last week. And in first place, 85%. I'm like a dictator. What do you miss about gaming in the past? And what are you glad is gone from gaming in the past?
You know what I don't miss about gaming in the past? I'll tell you what I don't miss about gaming in the past.
Eyes widen.
No, I don't miss password save systems. Password save systems were a fucking nightmare. And I feel like this is something that everyone knows about, but hey, I'm almost 40 and plenty of people are younger than me. If you're younger and you don't know about password save systems, before there were battery saves or just, you know, hard drives and things like that in systems, we saved using passwords. So what you would do in a game is you'd play a game like, say, a really bad example is, holy fuck, River City. A good example of a bad one is River City Ransom. Say you're playing a game like River City Ransom where there's all sorts of stats and stuff that you can get and progress to save. And you're like, well, I'm done playing the game for the day. You go and you get a password. But you have to write it down. And it was rarely a small password. With a game like, say, Adventures of Lolo, it was pretty easy. It was just a four-letter password
for each stage.
It's just each stage. There's nothing that carries over from stage to stage. It just tells you where you're restarting.
Sure. You know, they'll keep track of items or anything.
But the more RPG elements get entered into a game, and the more there is to keep track of, the more items there are to find, and the more things carry over, you end up with games like River City Ransom, where you're putting in an entire page.
That's a weird one, because that came out like 89. They should have had this, or 90 in the US. They should have had that battery.
And I think it was battery save in the... Actually, I think it was a disk system game in Japan.
Okay.
But it's probably why, because it wasn't a battery
like
save
in Japan.
Like with
Kid Icarus and Metroid.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, the thing is, most of the time they were like, I would say maybe 8 digits times maybe 4 spaces. Like that was like Metroid and Kid Icarus had similar ones. So it wasn't like impossible to deal with, but there would always be a point in time, no matter how many times you checked that password when you wrote it down, there would always come a point in time, usually in the last third to quarter of the game, where you'd go and put that password in and the password just wouldn't register.
So that's bad, Ian. That's really bad.
That's bad.
You know what's also bad? When you have a battery save and it deletes anyway.
Yes.
Because that's like the false sense of security when you have your full Baseball Stars roster and over at Billy's and he gets mad or something and just hits the power button with that hold and reset. And you can forget to hit reset sometimes when you're playing like that or Legend of Zelda. And it gets wiped. The RAM gets wiped.
Yep.
And you feel like you want to fucking kill someone. When you put like a month into building your Baseball Stars franchise and having all your creative players and your season and everything is gone. And it ain't coming back.
I can't remember which game it was. It might have been Zelda 1, because I watched my dad beat Zelda 1, but maybe my mom's game got deleted on that. I still have my mom's save game on a Dragon Warrior cartridge. Maybe a Zelda 2 game got wiped. But yeah, that was always awful. Like, the fact that we have solid, like, reliable spaces for our save games now on actual hard drives.
Real hard drives, flash drives, yes.
And that's honestly a thing that's only been around since, like...
20 years?
Excuse me. I mean, not even like 15. Yeah, I mean,
PS2 had the hard drive.
PS2 did for like the online game, but PS2 still used memory cards. It was Generation 7. It was PS3, 360, and Wii where things really started to get saved to an actual hard drive instead of a memory card.
Were the memory cards on PS1 and PS2, were they pretty reliable though?
PS1, no, third-party ones weren't. You'll always hear about people. The PS2 ones were pretty reliable, but I've had corrupt ones.
We'll stay in this track though. What I don't miss is when we didn't have the ability to save a game. That was miserable. And I don't think where we brought this up before, I don't think we brought that up, how miserable it was to be forced to play a game to completion.
Yeah.
Like that's
I mean, as a kid, it was fun, but as an adult, I realized that that's not a fun way to play games.
It's miserable. Even as a kid, it wasn't fun because you're locked into an afternoon instead of playing wiffle ball. I got to try to beat Ninja Gaiden. I can't stop.
But you've got to dedicate another half an hour to get back to that last level, and then you got to try that. Yeah, it's annoying. You know, obviously with certain games like shooters or whatever, repetition is part of the game. It's how you learn the game. It's how you get better at it. But with like platformers and stuff like that, especially some of the longer ones, man, I don't need to go through all those levels
again. Plus, sometimes you're in the zone. Sometimes you're playing the best you ever played right then.
Yeah.
You're not going to, like, sometimes I remember I played Ninja Gaiden as a kid. Sometimes, yeah, I would fly through it, get to the last stage and have problems. But other times, it'd be like, oh my God, this isn't my day. So, like, then you got to. There's a different, I think, mentality that was introduced for games. Whenever you want to say that, when just about every game started to have, we'll just say saves, you want, or most of them, you want to say like late 90s or whatever, when you had most, I'm talking about console, obviously, versus PC, where you don't feel like you're trapped anymore playing a game. So, like, you're trapped with that one game. Like you're forced to, your experience is that one game and that's it. That's you're playing that game for the day. That's your game.
Yeah.
That's it. That's your one game for today. Before you do homework, you can't do other games. One game. And that's something that's now totally gone. We have now freedom to be like, all right, save points every console or whatever. You can suspend state on your Switch. You can just put in sleep mode, come back to it. You know what I mean, that's a huge win for us. I ain't nostalgic about that. I'm nostalgic about a lot of stuff. I don't miss that.
And then real quick, just two things that I do miss. Well, one, they're kind of hand in hand. I miss being able to just jump into a game. I miss pressing start and playing. I like story in my games, don't get me wrong, but I think pacing of modern games, especially modern games, I think, is very slow. I think games take a long time to get going. I think there's even, you know, certain platformers. I think there's something to be said about being able to press start and just jump into a game.
Have an intro level that sort of.
Yeah, I don't. I hate the modern 2 hour long tutorial. I don't want that.
That's basically what the new ActRaiser was. I'm playing this game. I'm like, wow, this is taking a long time to teach me the game. And you're repeating stuff over and over again. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I hate that. I hate the modern tutorial. I'm glad it's there if people want it, because some people, that's how they learn. They want to be shown, and I get that. But that's not me, which leads me to my next thing. And I've said this before when this question has come up similarly. I miss, more than anything, instruction manuals. I miss having an instruction manual.
Where's my Playdate reference?
From the Evercade?
Yeah.
From the day I started playing video games until the day they stopped putting manuals in the boxes, I would buy a game and go through the manual. With RPGs, I would buy the game and keep the manual near me so I could reference things like systems and things like that as I'm playing. I hate having to do it all through in-game menus. I don't like in-game help menus. It's not as easy to find something as it is to just pick up a book and flip through it. And I hate reading huge, long chunks of text on a screen. I want to read it on paper. I know they cost money to print, but there was...
It's not that much.
But it was far easier to just have a manual. I that's the one thing that I think people always gloss over when they talk about reading something digitally, is you can't just flip. The inability to flip and find something
That's why books have survived.
Yes.
The flipping and carrying around, you can't do that easy with a tablet, and you can't go back to bookmark stuff. You can't.
And I have an e-reader, and I like reading normal books on it, but like...
For
something like reference, it's impossible. I tried reading like some Dungeons & Dragons shit on there, and I deleted it off my fucking reader and just picked my book back up because it's impossible.
It's a great point about manuals. And it's also another thing that manuals provides. It provides an entertainment companion outside of the game.
Yeah.
It's another form of enjoying the game when you're not playing the game. It gives you more background. You can take it with you. People would take them to school and read them or show them to their friends.
Little introductory story, character bios.
It's another level of enjoyment that wasn't baked in the game, but actually enhanced the experience more so than a modern tutorial or a story. It's a different piece of art form, the writing in the manual, the artwork. It's totally different. I think that's been lost, just that alone.
Some manuals used to show you some of the enemies you'd see.
And the posters.
And you'd get excited to be like, I want to see this guy. Or they'd tell you a little bit about the levels that are coming up. Manuals were great.
I spent an hour reading that Legend of Zelda poster pack in.
Sure.
The story, all the items explained, all the... Like, that was an experience in and of itself, just that. That's gone. The one thing I bring up, we always bring up, is that we lost more of your kid, but probably because there was less console games coming out in the late 80s, because it was mostly NES for people. Everyone was playing the same thing for the most part. You had kids that get the weird games or other thing, but for the most part, everyone was playing this new game was coming out, or at least talking about it. Everyone was talking about Bayou Billy when it came out, for example. It was a Nintendo Power.
Everyone played Contra. Everyone played Rampage. Yeah. Everyone played Mario 3.
There was a communal experience. The other thing, this goes back to what Frank Cifaldi said, Not for Resale. When you had less choice back then, it forced you to try things you wouldn't normally do. He said it made you a more interesting person. That's an interesting quote that he said. So, but yes, when you're forced to play was at your friend's house, when he had Star Voyager, not the best example, but you put it in and you played it and you tinkered around with it.
It's true. If I was left to my own device as a kid, I never would have picked up a fucking football game. I hate them. I hated them, but that's how I learned to love Tecmo. That's how I learned to enjoy fishing games, by playing what was around.
The games were super stupid expensive back then when you account for inflation too. So like, it's not like, you know, oh, we don't like these six games. Well, I ain't getting another game for 5 months, so we got to play these games. You know, that's it. Obviously, you can rent them out, but I mean, not everyone had those easy options. You're over your friend Joey's house, you just play some street hockey or street tennis. What do you got, Joey? Oh, what was a game he had that was kind of weird? Hell, we played, he had Donkey Kong Jr. Math. Only kid I knew that had it. We played it because it was one of the options.
Sure.
It was there. Why did you have that game, Joey? Well, there's like three kids in the house. You had to learn how to count and stuff. I'll never forget that he had Donkey Kong Jr. Math. I knew no other kid that had that game, which must have means he had the NES early. He must have gotten like 86. Must have had that. Anyway, so yeah, that's some of the stuff that we talk about. The manual is always a good one. And it's not just, oh, nostalgia thing for the manual. It's like you're losing an art form.
You lose an art form, but you also just lose, you're losing the most practical, easy way to deliver information quickly to someone who's playing a game. A manual on their lap. Instead of having to press start, go into the online help menu.
Have some stupid mascot show up and tell you how to get through. It's like, oh my God, okay. Let me just read it and I'll be good. Let's move on at my own pace. Right, good?
Good.
We got voicemails, Ian.
We only got time for a couple.
We only record for an hour 24. This is a quicker one than usual.
Well, I'm talking about the time.
We got 10 minutes. Go to anchor.fm/the CU podcast if you want to send us some voice messages. We appreciate them. Please keep them short and sweet.
And we love you.
Comments about Ian's eyeglasses are looking stylish. I do like those glasses, Ian.
Oh, thank you.
I love the white little inner brim on there. Or my hair are always welcome, those comments.
They're over a year old.
Hey, guys. Alex here. I've been going over some of your older videos for nostalgia's sake, and I've got a couple of questions for you guys, a couple pretty meaningless questions. But anyways, Pat, how much of a Highlander encyclopedia are you out of character? And Ian, do you still have that My Shira Nui poster from the old Luna store? Thanks, guys.
No, I don't have the My Shira Nui poster. That was Traeg's, and I think that is still hanging up somewhere. It was the King of Fighters Maximum Impact poster.
I love Highlander. I do not have an encyclopedic knowledge, but I know enough to get through a conversation with some of the women that used to be on the alt.tv/Highlander news forum that was on in the 90s. I could keep up with them, but that's all it was. It was all women on that site. And it was like 16-year-old Pat chatting about the latest episode that came out. It was fun times. Shout out to anyone out there still on alt.tv.Highlander, by the way. Anyway, I know enough about what happens in the seasons. I know enough of the characters. I know enough about the movies, but I'm not an encyclopedic knowledge. No.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Matt from Rochester, York again. You've mentioned this con a few times before, the Retro Game Con in Syracuse, New York.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, you guys ever plan to come back to it, at least when they have it? Because I know it's been canceled the last couple of years because of the pandemic. It's bad hype. I think I harassed you about Eli Manning there. I apologize for that.
You harassed me about my buddy Eli?
Hope all is well. Talk to you guys later.
Oh, yeah. Retro Game Con is run great by Pat Milligan up there. It's hard to get to. There's no direct flight, but I love going to Syracuse.
Never been there. If you want to see me there, tell them that you want me there.
They got a friendlies there, Ian. They got decent all-you-can-eat.
Tell them you want me there, and I will go.
We'll get you there next year, hopefully. Next.
Hey, Ian and Pat, this is Charles from Deerfield Beach, Florida, the sweatiest part of South Florida. Just a quick question. What retro game, like ColecoVision, Atari 2600, or retro, PC game, would you like to see brought ported to mobile? Personally, I would like to see a lot of the classic Atari Activision titles like Frostbite, or Hero, and games like that brought over. Thanks a lot.
I never heard anyone say they wanted a retro game ported to mobile ever.
Yeah, to mobile? I don't know. I mean, actively want for anything mobile.
No.
But I have said it a bunch of times. I would love, portable, sure, because I think Atari games are great for portable gaming. I really, really want to see, I know I've already mentioned it about the Evercade, I want to see an Activision Atari. I want Barnstorming. I want Pitfall. I want Stampede. I want all the good ones. That's what I want to see.
It's probably not worth their time, honestly. Activision Blizzard, like, oh, whatever.
Oh, sure. Cares?
But like, yeah, it would make some money.
Hey, Pat. Hey, this is Josh again.
Hey, Josh.
If you guys were offered $1 million, who would you fight in a celebrity boxing match? Pat, I could definitely see you fighting Tommy Tallarico or that fucking kid Billy from your childhood. I'd take Pat in 2 rounds, knockout easily. Thanks.
Billy was always bigger than me because he was like a year and a half older. And when you're a kid, that's like he bullied me sometimes when he got pissed. When his parents would yell at me, he would take it out of me. Whatever. I was the smallest boy in the block. I said that. That's not why I'm rough and tough now. Who would I fight for $1 million? I don't need money. If I want to fight someone, I don't need money. I'm a pit bull with dimples. If I'm going to fight someone, I don't need money to do it. I mean, if you're going to give me money, sure. Paulie D, celebrity boxing. There you go. Throw some money at me. How about you, Ian?
Let me just make sure it's the right guy. Matt Walsh.
Matt Walsh? Did you fight Matt Walsh?
Fucking hate Matt Walsh.
Oh, he's one of those like political commentators?
He's a fucking piece of guys. Shit. Yeah, I can't stand him.
Okay. Next one.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Duffy from Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville.
I'm curious, asking the both of you, what's your funniest story from a convention? Thanks.
Funniest story while we're at a convention?
My funniest story at a convention was kind of walking in on Jax peeing.
On who?
Jax peeing.
Oh, Jax. Jax, I thought you meant multiple Woo-wee! People named Jax.
That feels better.
And you embarrass poor Jax.
By the way, Matt Walsh, yes, the commentator, not the comedian. Not the good Matt Walsh.
Oh, there is a Matt Walsh comedian?
That would suck.
That would suck if your name was the same as some asshole.
Yeah, it'd be bad.
That'd be bad. Fun. I don't know. I don't have like a laugh out loud moment. Then again, like conventions, a lot of it blurs. You talk to so many people over a weekend, so that's a tough one. Let me think about that. I'll come back to that.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Ray Lynn again from Ontario, Canada. Here's a question for both of you. You're about to start the completely unnecessary convention, and each of you get two guests each you can bring.
Oh, Jesus.
But the only thing is, they can't be anyone you're friends with or acquainted with. What guests are you bringing? They don't have to be in the video game industry either. Anything goes. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
I know Patrick Stewart then. I don't know. I want Pat Stewart at a convention. I don't know. It's a tough one.
Brian Eno and Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges would be fun.
There you go. Yeah.
Give me Van Damme then.
No, there. Fine. Good enough.
Hopefully he doesn't ask for any extracurricular activity stuff in his green room. You know, I don't think he's doing that stuff anymore. He used a lot of coke back in the day. That's what I'm trying to say. Who didn't, though?
Hey, Pat and Ian. Adam here from Ypsilanti, Michigan. Question for Ian. With major life changes in play after leaving Luna, could there be little Ians running around the Ferguson Manor?
Why do people ask about kids with us sometimes? I don't understand that.
I don't mind. I think that is just one of those questions that people always ask. No, Vonnie and I are absolutely not interested in having kids.
Why have kids when you can have cats, as my sister says?
Yeah, one of the first like important discussions we ever had was like, how do you feel about kids? No? Good. I think that's something that needs to be discussed pretty fucking early on in a relationship, because I see it tear apart a lot of relationships 10 years on.
Oh, really? Like, you got to hash out before you get married.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not something you can put off.
No, I know.
Holy
but
shit.
People do.
That's like bigger than getting married.
People put off everything because they want to fucking stick their dick in something. That's what guys do. They get. I see all these fucking dudes get married because they think
just
they're...
Just have sex?
I don't know what it is. I think sex fucking fucks up people's brains.
Oh, yeah. We're demons.
I'm just talking as a dude because I'm a dude. But women, men loving other men, women loving other women, whatever. People get together because they just want... They don't think about the longevity of the situation. That's, people are short fucking sighted.
Sex is great, but if that's your primary reason to get into a relationship with someone, that's obviously historically what it was, though. Oh, you do one man, one woman, and you can't have sex outside your marriage if you're Catholic. And it's like that creates a lot of bad shit long term, as Ian said, including babies that no one wants.
People, Hi, Ian. Paul from Detroit.
Hi, Paul.
Just wondering what your workout routines are like, and if you'd ever consider running a Patreon workout session.
No.
Nope. These days I do curls. Get those drinks back.
Yep.
That's about all I'm doing.
I actually thought there was a time when after I moved here, I thought about going for yoga certification. There was like a 6-month period. I'm like, I like yoga. I do it every week. It would be fun to do that. But it's like 150, 200 hours. And once I got it, it'd be like, what the fuck do you do with it? Yoga instructors don't make jack shit unless you have your own place. And it's like, it's a cool thing. I mean, you know, at the time, not saying I do it, but it's, yeah, it is nice to be a male yoga instructor when it's 95% women, but that's not reason to get into it. What do? I work out. Resistance bands are great. They're $25-$30. You can do 80-90% of what you can do at a gym with resistance bands instead of going to a gym and potentially hurting yourself with big weights and being around people and whatever. So get yourself some resistance bands. Do yoga at least once a week. I have a heavy bag as well, more for cardio, and that's what I do. I work out. I only work out like 3 days a week, maybe 4 days. I'm getting older, and most people, you don't need to work out more than 3 days a week. That's fine. We got lives. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Mike from Jersey. Love
Mike.
The show. This question is for Pat. Sure. I was wondering who your main influences are from radio in terms of your podcast voice. Whenever I hear the podcast and you're speaking, it kind of reminds me of the Opie and Anthony show for some reason. I was wondering if you were ever a fan of that show or Howard or any other talk radio in the New York metropolitan area. Okay. Again, love the show and speak to you. Bye.
I was a huge Opie and Anthony fan growing up in my late teens, early 20s, and probably into mid-20s when I went to XM. A huge fan of them. But I don't do a radio voice. This is my natural speaking voice. This isn't a come on. I don't get up there and go, hey, and it was a nice show. No, this is my voice. But they didn't do voices. Howard doesn't do a radio voice. I don't do a radio voice.
I think he just meant your
voice. Like how I present myself.
Yes.
Oh, okay. This is me. This is me. This is the same as me having a conversation with Ian at Luna for 2 hours. This is how I am. I'm not vastly different outside the podcast. Maybe Ian, I'm not like a different person.
No, I think we both.
We both turn on when
it's podcast time, but yeah. I am not much different. I mean, if anything, I'm just quieter. I don't talk this much when I'm not recording.
What's your voice? That's what I meant literally. But no, this is who I am. Maybe some people are surprised about that, but no, I don't have like a fucking YouTube persona that makes me kind of sick to my stomach. But do what you do out there, YouTubers, but I couldn't do that. Well, I'll do a couple more.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Jeff Dickinson here, Dallas, Texas.
Hey, Jeff.
Question. Now, I'm watching a video that just went live today about the Amigo and television.
Oh.
Now, I know it's a sore subject for everybody, me included, but they're releasing these physical editions in four-pack bundles of $79.99, or you get an eight-pack bundle for $149.99. Here's my question. Do you think people are going to be buying these since they're labeled as limited edition collectors, box games?
Jeff, I can answer that for you. They haven't been. They sold 99% of them in the first 3 days. They sold supposedly about 10,000 overall copies of the 50,000 allotment, and that's about what's going to sell.
The math is something like, 10,000 individual copies out of 50,000 individual copies. We looked into that in terms of sets sold. I can't remember what that was.
It's like 2,500 sets or 2,000 to 3,000 sets. So some are eight, some are four.
And it was all within the first 3 days.
Yeah, that's it. And that's about, we bring it up before, 6,000 pre-orders was reaffirmed. Tommy lied about there being 12,000 pre-orders and came after us. 6,000 pre-orders of the console in a year and a half, over a year and a half of getting pre-orders, 6,000.
Oh, yeah, it was in that article.
Yeah, it was reaffirmed. He came after us saying, oh, we did like 12,000. 600 was a number thrown around at one point.
No matter what you say, 6,000 fucking pre-orders is not a sustainable ecosystem.
Even if you quadruple that after it's released, we'll say you get to 30,000, 50,000. That's not sustainable.
I think the Apple Pippin had like a 30,000 to 50,000 install base, and
Ouya had 100,000 or so, right? And that didn't survive.
Right. I'm just saying, you see stuff with 30,000 install bases, never.
That's a complete flop. That's like you can't find the games for it, and it's worth a ton of money because there you go. So keep on your Amiga pre-orders. Okay, one last one. We got someone checking in.
So, posted a picture of the Amico AC adapter on the Intellivision Twitter. Nobody seemed impressed, even though the Amico logo was on the adapter. And I got to tell you, this is getting exhausting. I mean, I don't know what hoops I have to jump through to win you people over. This is the most thankless generation I've ever seen in my life. And were you too impressed? Of course not. Nothing impresses you. Especially Ian, man. Life just bores the shit out of him. You guys don't even appreciate the Super Mario Brothers movie. And that is a slap in the face to the Italian community. Pat, you're a disgrace to all of us.
What?
And I have had enough of your friends and the hurtful things they say because of how jealous you are of my accomplishments. Going to be in Boston this weekend, so if you want to try the Amico, come on down. We'd love to have you. Bye now.
Real quick, I said I'm a disgrace to Italians. I heard a nasty, nasty rumor that I really honestly don't hope is true, Tommy. I heard that you had pizza at one of the events in Boston this past weekend, and my source told me it was Domino's you got while you were in Boston.
Couldn't even ask around for the good pizza. Boston is probably the East Coast.
Boston's like a top probably six pizza city, and you couldn't get real pizza. Nasty rumor, Tommy. I want you to prove me wrong. In all seriousness, I will say thank you, Tommy. Prove me wrong. Show me the box of real Boston pizza that you got from a real pizzeria, not Domino's. Seriously, from one Thai American to another, that's slanderous, and I hope that wasn't true. Okay. That's it for the podcast.
That's it.
We had fun.
We did.
It seemed economical.
We had a great time.
We went through a lot of good stuff.
We did. All right,
everyone. I'm getting more pissed about that Atari thing the more I hear about it. Especially since we're misrepresenting Howard's work. He didn't work on that Yars game. They said he did. The whole thing's a mess.
It's a mess.
It's a mess.
Bye-bye.
Go to patreon.com/theapodcast if you want to hear about me fighting a mouse. Okay.